Bill Hall, Bob Allen, Candy Bose, Joe Bose, Patsy Clarkson, Linda Alderman, I will be taking notes, Larry Clarkson, Jody Akers, Ben Clarkson, Dave Turley, Mark Cram, Dale Clarkson. Is there anybody that I missed?
Bob Becker.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hello. How are you guys?
Good. Yeah, we got a good echo on our end. I don't know if anybody else does, too.
Yeah, we all have it. It tends to come and go. That's what happened last time we did this.
All right. Well, let's get this meeting going. Since we have an active role here, this meeting we're going to go over all the deed restrictions and changes to such as we need to start working on for this year. I don't know what to do on this thing for starting this thing out for this meeting here. Anybody want to take a stab at starting this up? And so we can have this discussion on everything. I mean, there's the rules and regulations. There's the covenants. There's all sorts of things. Where do we want to start on this thing? Where are we supposed to start on this thing right now?
Well, can I
read a lot of paper?
Yeah, can I chime in for a second, Mark, and see if Ben agrees with what I thought we were supposed to do today? Ben's idea was that rather than get down to the nuts and bolts of rewriting the PCNRs, right now we're just trying to figure out what are the items that are going to keep us from getting that done and try to work around those. And the actual writing of the PCNRs will be an ongoing and continuing process forward from here. So, like I said to Jody earlier, today we want to get the boulders off the road. Is that what your thoughts were on this?
It is, and so before everybody got in, we had kind of started not knowing, and under the legal area, Jody was kind of starting and outlining, some of the difference. So, if somebody doesn't have a better idea, I would just as soon Jody help go through that, and with the diverse group that's on here that has background has worked on this in the past several times, let's just discuss and see if what we agree on, and if it's an area that's a hot topic, maybe let's delay it to the end, and then what time we have we can discuss through that, keeping in mind that none of us want to go through this process again, and so where it's been hashed through and voted on before, if we can close the gap on some of the disagreements to where, we can pass it, because until we get it passed, we're all being damaged by our inability to collect some assessments and some other things. So let's see if we can't compromise a few places and make it work.
Yeah, I would add just one more thing. Let's, and this is my feeling. You guys take it for what it's worth. Let's try to stick to what we really need to do instead of ancillary things that may or may not hold the whole process up. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Phil Hall, just one comment. We come back to these same topics and we try to reinvent the whole wheel. And I like what Vance just said about picking out maybe the hot topics. I don't know how many have seen or read through where there was a comparison back in the 2004-05 era of what thoughts were then made, and they were written side by side of the protective covenants. I'm curious to know who has read or studied that or has a copy of that.
I think everybody does. It was passed out from Vance and Jody or Linda. So.
Yeah,
everybody here on the board, I do believe Phil has that copy at our disposal.
And have we all gone through it in preparation for this meeting?
I have.
I'm sure everybody's read it. Yes.
Okay, because it's really imperative that we understand, like, we kind of have some kind of feel of what's been done prior. And what I did was make a, from your comparison sheet, Phil, which was really helpful, thank you for putting that together way back when, of what we all, what both committees did agree to, and then notated which ones were just off by a little bit, and then which ones it looks like that we really need to have another discussion on. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's most likely how we're going to start going through these, to see where we're agreeing at and moving on, and then finding out where we're not agreeing at and separating those and maybe going into those, like Ben said, at the end where we can talk more about them. So if we're,
okay.
If we're on the same page on that, we'll go ahead and start. Does any other comments need to be made before that?
This is Dale. I have one question. Who is Group 2?
Group 2 at the time was, you know, in the one way we have it, it was Hall Committee and Clarkson Committee. And I believe, and then there's the proposed, and I can't remember. I think that was our staff to take the two things, looking at both the committees, and to reconcile. I think that's what it was at the time. Yeah. But I think Group 2 generally was the Hall Committee, and Group 1 was your committee, Dale.
Okay, well, I just, the material I got recommended that we ratify Group 2 version, and I didn't find where that was identified.
I read that through that document also, and where it says reasons why you should vote to amend the outdated bylaws and protective covenants, and there was a note you know, at the top about trying to get members to come to the meeting and be informed and to vote. And so Vance sent me a copy of this, you know, where it mentions Group 2. And Vance, I don't recall, that was a separate thing sent out by
that
Group 2?
That was part of the meeting package. In 2005, I don't know how many of you remember, we all got about a half pound of documents for the meeting. And
oh yeah, so I think there was a Group 1, they specified what they thought was important, and then Group 2 specified.
And I have, but they didn't, there's in that document, and I can scan and send out all of these, I have this whole package from 2005, it is about, I'm guessing about 50 pages here worth of stuff. The reason I sent out the Group 2 summary was that was a pretty good roadmap to the things that caused trouble. That's why I wasn't trying to favor anybody over anybody else. I was just looking for a good summary of the things that are the problems that, you know, are perceived problems, let's put it that way. And that's why I threw that out there. Does that make sense to you guys?
That does. Yes, I read it. I agree with you. It does kind of point out the differences, saying this group thinks this and this.
Right. For, you know, the more detailed breakdown is that, whatever it is, 16, 18 pages worth of grid where they actually take things point by point, which, again, it wasn't, from what I understood from when Ben came up with the idea to do this, wasn't to do that today. It was that's going to be an ongoing process, and we work our way up to annual meeting, hopefully with only one set of PCNRs for people to vote on this year. And I think that's critical, by the way. The competing sets thing was very difficult on all of us. And I think we either have a set that we can vote on, and they either vote it in or they don't vote it in, which case if we don't vote it in, we stay where we are.
I agree. I think that it was tough, but we didn't at the time know any other way to do it because.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm just throwing that out as a let's, maybe it'd be a better thing to try to go forward with just one set that we can work our way through. And that's what we're here for now.
Okay, let's.
But maybe looking at that Group 2 version thing where those 8 points that are brought up, are those the most, if those are the most glaring, that might be one way to approach it, but. anyway.
Yeah, and those, as far as I made this point to a couple of people in discussions via email that those things are still with us. They're still the ball and chain, as far as I can tell.
Okay, so shall we start going through the amended PCNR that were amended in June of 1997 and start going through that with all this with us to find where our similarities are and where the boulders are? We should start there?
Please.
Sure.
Does everybody have a copy of the current PCNRs in front of them now so we can go through that?
Jody, let's move along, and if somebody doesn't, then they weren't interested enough to help.
All right, we start off the PCNRs.
Hey, Jody?
Yes?
Did you check to see what the state of Utah requirements currently are in lieu of this in preparation for this meeting, since you're legal?
Well, now we're requiring an attorney, Mark.
hang on just a second. That I don't think there's any disagreement about doing that part of it. We all agree that needs to happen. That needs to happen, and that's not really an impediment.
I was just stating that there's got to be a printed guideline. There's a lot of different stuff onto the internet.
And yes, and Ben had said most of it we could cut and paste as is and avoid some legal costs. So,
since Jody is legal, did you prep for that, Jody?
Well, yes, Mark. I told you guys that at the November meeting that I went through and looked through some of the current bylaws of the state of Utah and how they're written. They're pretty general, and we should have not a big problem doing that. However, our PCNRs are so different than most other groups, but it's something that once we find out what we need to change or what needs to be addressed to do our goals of collecting the assessments and the past dues, we need to figure that out first and then go from there knowing what is presented to us and then have the attorney or find that if we can word it correctly. And most of the stuff has been worded nicely in the grid sheet that Vance was talking about. So I think we have some good guidelines to go by, but no, it's too itemized for us, for me to know looking online at their other PCNRs for other associations of how ours relates to theirs.
Okay. Wanted to know. Go ahead.
Moving on. So on the first part of our PCNRs, it looks like everybody was pretty much the same on the term. The first item under the PCNRs is the term, and Group 1 and Group 2 both had the same agreement on them, so it looks like we don't have to spend any time on that part. Number 2 on the PCNRs deals with membership, and there was a little bit of discrepancy there between the two groups. And this is where, you know, we can have input come in. For Group 2, we have it determined as 20-acre lots. And of course, there are some 10 acres thrown in there. And one vote per lot, whereas Group 1, 20-acre lots or 10-acre lots. Let me put my notes here. Looks like they both agreed on one vote per parcel, no matter what the size was. That looks like what that's come down to. Did anybody see that as anything different?
I see that the same, but there's that one little word, inseparably connected with one membership.
Yes.
That was our sticker.
That was the boulder on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me clarify again. Are you referring to the second column as number 2 and the third column as number 1?
Yes.
Yes, from here on out. notate that Hall Committee was column was group number two, Clarkson Committee was group number one.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, so good point, because that is the only difference between the two groups is the word inseparably, and then the bottom of the number two, I'm sorry, group one, if Kane County permits subdivision of the lots, no partition shall result in a lot less than 10 acres. And I think that's the same on both. Both of them agree pretty much on that. And in group number one, instead of having it inseparably connected with the lot, the Clarkson group goes to say the owner of each lot, whether 10 or 20, will be called a member and will be entitled to their vote for one 20-acre parcel and one half. So, yeah, the one word is the only thing that's different between those in concept.
So you're saying inseparable is being the only word that's different in there, and everything else is pretty much the same. I don't see in the Hall Committee where they're show me. Is it were they in agreement with the 10 acres, Jody? It says 20 acres or less of a lot. Each property unit or lot presently consists of 20 or more acres. That's 20 or more, and Clarkson is talking about if Kane County allows the 10-acre parcels, then it splits it down.
Correct. You're right.
So does inseparable mean the same thing as a... all the exclusions from the Clarksons?
I think, let me just put in what I recall. We were worried at the time, we felt some pressure to be able to lease memberships and I'm really struggling to remember this part, but so in effect, the property owner could own his property, but could sell his membership or his membership rights or lease them or something like that. And so it was an effort to, being fearful that would lead to people going around and buying up memberships, somehow gaining controlling voting power, and then your vote wouldn't count for as much. That's why the word inseparably was put in there. And the issue about size of acres, I mean, for me personally, if Kane County agreed to it, it might mean more people, and I think there were some people that were worried about more, you know, people on the ranch, but I personally am not opposed if that were the case, just so that memberships, the thing between membership and property ownership was not a separate. They weren't separated, and that's why we put in the word inseparably.
It's really quite overcrowded up there now, isn't it, Phil?
I don't see anybody when I go to my place.
You're right. I don't either.
So as I say, at this day and age, my feelings personally on the matter are not opposed to whatever Kane County, you know, down to 10 acres. I'm not opposed to that personally.
And the legitimate... play today, the PCs voted on many years ago to allow lots to be divided in half, and so that is in the existing protective covenants. Now, we may want to change that. I mean, that's the case that could be changed back, but right now... That is the law.
Well, I guess, except for the fact that the PCNRs also say that, or either PCNRs or bylaws say that we have a cap of 300 maximum members allowed. strictly adhered to. I remember that.
Yes, that's the corporate articles of incorporation. It was 200, and it was amended to say 300, and some want to fuss about the fact that there's 305 lots. That can be changed if the board and the membership decides to do so. But I don't know, is there much difference between 300 members or if some of those members become half members, they still would have a half a vote and share in the same. It would divide the assets the same, whether it's a whether there's some half memberships involved. At the present time, there are a few undivided interests up there that have been there since the project was created, and it hasn't really meant very much to anybody one way or the other.
Okay, so the membership column, membership section, is something that we should go through a little bit later and work that out a little bit more. It doesn't seem like there's a big conflict here of what both committees were proposing, so I'd say we just do a little discussion on that at the next go-around and move on to the next land use and preservation, number three. And this had a little bit of differences between groups one and two. And Phil, can you go into that a little bit more? Because you gave an example here of the airstrip. But can you go into a little bit more on that as what you had in mind?
Yeah. There was, from time to time, there's been different discussions about storage sheds or places where members could leave a car or ATV vehicles. And so it led into quite a discussion about what can the board authorize or not on the common grounds of the ranch.
Okay.
And, of course, and that's why we added in there, the board may regulate the use of any portion of the common area by rule and regulation, except as specified in item 12. And by way of example, it says. And that's why then we entered, I put in this little stuff just as an example of what the board could address, and that was all about the airstrip. And see, at one point in time, I'd considered, and others had asked about a layout of the airstrip and the common property around it, and the regulations, you know, for airplanes to land, and how many feet back from a strip you had to be if you've erected any structure, and so. That's why that was put in there.
I see.
By way of example.
Okay. So is there any, Dale, on that, on committee number one, is there anything, is that a huge issue, or is that a small little boulder, or?
I think it's fine like it is.
Like it is in group.
If you look into the third, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Like it is, what, you mean, Dale, in the current PCNRs, or mean with the change that the Clarkson Committee submitted or the change that the Hall Committee submitted? Are we pretty much in agreement on that one?
About the same. They both say about the same thing. The only thing in the Halls was the only pilot and wanted in there a type of lease on the landing strip area, which is provided for in that right-hand suggested column as proposed, would be that the board may regulate the use of any portion of the common areas and other association property by rule and regulation. So I see there's no conflict between those two.
Okay, so we can say the farthest right column is the one we can agree on, the one to the right.
I would agree. I would agree with that. I gave that example, but the far right column does just generally address that, and that's, I think, enough.
Okay. Is that good, Dale? That works for you, too?
You bet.
Okay. All right. Moving on to livestock and pets. Okay. Right. The big difference I see here is between the Hall committee is it is allowing cows and horses. Under the Clarkson committee, we're allowing only cows and free range of common areas and for all lot owners. Horses shall be not be submitted.
Well, there's clearly talked about at that time that horses were not should not be free able to range free for several reasons, but the cows could. So I think four is pretty well agreed upon.
You know, here's Phil again. I can't not remember any great pressure and why, you know, my group authorized horses, whereas Dale's did not. But I do see that now that I know more about horses and that, I would agree more with the column to the right, the fourth column. But,
okay.
Okay, this is Ben, and since this is my area under livestock, I'm wondering what the problem is, or what the definition of free range. You know, obviously if they're in the ranch yard being fed hay out of the barn, that's not free range, but, like our current lease for, being able to have a horse in different areas, then Doug has had a couple of horses in the meadow at different times. Or may have one that runs with the herd in different areas, and I hate to see us be so restrictive in a legal document in the corporate world that hampers the ability for a farmer or rancher to effectively run his ranch. I don't know where we've ever had a problem with this, even going back to the days that the association owned their own string of horses and had 10 or 15 horses, and there's different times where they were turned out in several different pastures.
I can't see a problem where they're turned out in a pasture, and maybe free range was just running free over everybody's acreage and not in a pasture. That part I don't understand either.
Well, until we can improve our fences and stuff, there's almost no place on the ranch other than right around the headquarters or the meadow where they can be without them possibly getting on somebody's lot. And so, like I said, you know, even the government and the BLM will determine between large livestock and, you know, horses, cows, or maybe sheep, and then, you know, small livestock. But I don't know where there's ever been a problem that I'm aware of where adding more detail and more language into this document benefits anybody. I see a whole lot of areas where if it's signed in, we're going to be violating it left and right.
Do you want to know the background on that one?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Has there been a problem?
Two items. Members were told they could graze cattle up there along with the herd. Some said, well, gee, I don't have any cows, but I have two horses. I'll just turn them out. It was not a part of the management program. It was not part of DSROA. It was not part of Doug Hunt. It was just a member saying, well, hey, I can turn mine out as well as a cow. Secondly, I had a beautiful paint stallion horse up there, and he was turned out and running loose. And some were highly objectionable, so that's what this was all about, was Robinson had a stallion up there, I had a stallion up there part of the time, and then members thought they could turn their horses out to run. That doesn't mean Doug Hunt or...
Well, but we already have rules in writing that say you can turn out a cow with the herd. So we just didn't enforce the other rules that we have, not write more rules to clarify that. So I'm going on record as highly opposed to adding any different language in here as far as naming what type of animal. that if we want to lease something, I think that that from year to year, the current board and the situation and stuff can regulate that. We already know that members under just a general member is not allowed to do that. Under our grazing lease, I don't want members saying, hey, Doug can't have a horse up there. And surely under proper livestock management, there's going to be times that having a stallion in certain areas definitely isn't wise, and we're looking at another donkey lawsuit or something. So, but that still should be something that the board over livestock or the current lessee running the operation should have the latitude to make good judgment on.
I agree.
I agree with generally with what you're saying. Listening to Dale, that did bring back to memory a few of those points, and that's why the why we added this stuff about fencing. And
I like the stuff about fencing. The stuff that's underlined there, specifically naming horses, I see a lot of problems with that. But to clarify, which is state law, and nobody can object, any member has the right to fence off their parcel. If they're having problem and damage, like a few have complained about this last year or so, it is their prerogative to fence off their area and then keep their horse or whatever on their lot. But then they wouldn't be free ranging.
Okay, so it sounds like that we're in agreement, or maybe I'm assuming, but if we keep the same verbiage on the left-hand column on number 4, all livestock shall be permitted on the premises, domestic pets will be under the owner's immediate supervision and control of all, at all times, and then add on the bottom section over there on number 4, an owner has the right blah, 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 blah. Add that on to that and we're good?
Well, take the column on the right, but just take out the lighter area underlined.
Either way,
it's kind of the same.
Yeah, because it adds the domestic pets at the very end of that one.
Okay.
So I'd agree with what you said.
Dale, are you good with that? That's not a problem with anybody?
Yep.
Okay, good. Moving on. Number 5. Number 5 was very close on both sides. I think the far right column covers it all. Do you all want to give that a quick breeze over to make sure that that's okay?
Phil Hall, I agree with that. And the far right column, I think that's good.
Phil, is that good too?
That's fine.
Okay, so we all agree on this one, okay. All right, moving on. Number 6. Nuances. This one had to do with signs, basically the difference were between the signs, and the only thing different between the Hall column and the Clarkson column was advertising purposes sign. Everything else was the same. So it looks like column number, again, the far right-hand column. Let's go by columns here. I'm going to call one column. Phil's column is column 1. Dale's is column 2. And the, whoever put these together, column 3 would be the far right-hand column. So it looks like column 3 pretty much covers the whole thing. Is everybody in agreement with that?
Yeah, this is Vance. Can I say something?
Sure.
We're pretty much not paying attention to that anyway. We put up signs as necessary, I think. And, nobody's going around busting my chops for putting in a dead-end road sign on that road along the airstrip because the ATV people kept coming down it and doing donuts in my front yard. We sort of need to take it on a case-by-case basis, but, that can be a guideline, but we kind of need people have done what they need to do, to make things work, so.
Yeah. So are we okay on column 3 verbiage?
I'm fine with column 3. That still allows for any of those special needs, Vance, to be approved by the board.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand. I mean, we've not been following the letter of that is what I'm getting at. We carve out exceptions. It's not like engraved in stone in any case. Yeah.
Okay. Dale, good?
I'm good.
Okay. All right. Moving on. Number 7, firearms. Let me put it up here.
We're going with column 3 on both number 5 and 6, correct?
Well, that's what's agreed upon between all the parties right now, is that seems to be acceptable.
Okay.
It looks like that could be a copy and paste thing. Okay, firearms. A little bit of difference here. Let's take time to read this one out real quick. Firearms, unless anybody has anything to say about it before I read through this. Looks like on column 1, the discharge of firearms shall be only allowed in the designated areas allowed by the association and in compliance with the ETOL code. Number column 2 goes into a little bit more of in the association.
At the time, we got a lot of input from Larry Clarkson on this, saying that, you know, you can't keep a gun owner from discharging his firearm on his property, and then there was questions about, well, how are we going to discipline a member if there's careless action? And so finally, this item 3 was just kind of a general thing.
You're going to have to clarify who's going to be the one to discuss whether or not it was careless or not.
Yeah, that got into a whole big can of worms, see.
You had a shooting range set up near property, then you should be fine to go set up as long as you've set up all the proper safety precautions, guidelines, and so forth to do so.
Right. And so, you know, that's why compliance with Utah State and Kane County regulations is about all we can do. It's pretty hard to go around. Nobody wears a policeman's hat, but yeah. So that's. I don't know. I was. Is Larry here? Was Larry Clarkson here with the group today?
Yeah, I'm here.
So in general, as we read those two, I think that's how we came up with this column 3. This fourth column was an attempt to kind of merge at the time things. And Larry, how do you feel about the firearm issue?
Hang on a second. He's double checking side by side on them right now.
Okay.
Okay, this is Ben real quick. My question is, have we had a problem on this?
Not to my knowledge.
At the time we had a group, I think, that were went out close to the ranch and were firing over the heads of cabins and things. There was some little thing that kind of brought it to point, and I can't remember. But
well, I just think that to have something general in there that anybody doing something like that, once if they were called in the sheriff's department, or if there was an accident or something to limit liability, it's easy to say, yeah, we've told you to don't be an idiot and point guns at people. But at the same time, I think there's plenty of room up there for, whether it's on my lot or different areas for you to set up, you know, some cans and plain count it with a .22 or allow, you know, I think our big safety issue is the high-powered rifle during the hunting season, which we've tried to minimize that in, you know, having them with a guide person.
Right, I agree. That's why I think column 3 handles it just fine.
Yeah, I agree.
Linda here. I think that item number 8 underneath the number 7 line was added as a result also, and which really should be 7A rather than number 8 because number 8 is violation penalty.
Okay.
But this underneath should be 7A rather than 8.
And, you know, on number 7, I do like column number 2. It's a little bit more a little bit more procedure-wise, that I like that. And then also, but we need to add to that, under the compliance with Utah State and county laws, I like how he's got more, a little bit more detail in there for safety purposes. So none of us have any issue with all three of those. It's just a matter of coming together with the verbiage. But do you all have any other comments about that as far as which verbiage you prefer?
I still think it's sixes. Even your second column, Jody, at the last sentence is all laws relating to hunting and firearm discharge will be strictly enforced, which means local, state, and federal law.
Okay, so we can leave that one just as is then.
Let me throw something in. This is Vance. If something dangerous is going on, it's not going to be you one of you guys from the board out there probably, you know, with your six shooter on your hip taking care of it anyway. Somebody's going to call law enforcement, and don't you think that's really who should be? I understand the whole trying to take away lot privileges if it's a member, but actually what happens if things get hairy is the sheriff's going to be involved, not so much us, don't you think?
I agree, and I think a lot of our violations are not even going to be members. They may be guests or people even passing through or trespassers on the land, and they're not going to read these rules anyway. So
right.
Common sense is still going to determine, and the sheriff's not going to say, well, tell me what's in your CCNRs. He's going to enforce proper code and law with or without this paragraph.
Okay.
Right. I mean, so we can leave a little bit of language in there about taking action against members, but, you know, I see why somebody has, you know, it's a little bit hard for, I mean, how would that work, you know? It's like, yeah, a bullet went over my head, so, you know, I'm gonna, you know, what are we gonna do as an association?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard.
Yeah, then it's based on hearsay. Enforceability is hard.
We can all take the time, care, and protection to know what we're doing is correct, and you know, plinking, as Ben stated, on our lot, we do not have any control of it. That bullet does hit a rock and ricochet. Accidents do happen, and if the bullet flings over your head, as long as they weren't doing it deliberately and they had everything set up in proper guidelines, I mean, accidents happen. I mean,
yeah. Well, maybe what we should do is we agree we need to exercise due diligence here and find out at some point what our minimum requirement is as far as a liability standpoint goes. You know, maybe this would be a question to ask our insurance carrier. It's like, what would you like to see us do so that you don't cancel us if you find out we didn't do it right?
That's a good point, Dan.
You know, the original protective covenant says you can't discharge a firearm except for in designated areas by the association. And Larry Clarkson's point at the way back then was you can't really legally keep a property owner from discharging a weapon on his property. And so that's the main thrust of what needs to be changed at the current PCNRs is, and that's why I kind of like column three.
Yeah. Larry, I think you just had a chance to read through this. What do you think?
I think column three is probably fine. My point back then was, as an association, we're trying to make all these rules and regulations, and rightfully so, to kind of govern what happens on association property. It really does not, especially in this instance, everybody's private lots, unless what you do starts affecting someone outside or association property, it really doesn't. We're infringing upon each other's rights more than we should be.
Right, I get that. And then the association issue looks like you guys handled with number eight.
That's right.
Let's read eight.
Let's change that right now to A. So we'll have that as 7A, item 7A.
Now, is there, in fact, another item 8?
Yes, there is.
Yes. That's right, there is.
Page that the violation penalty is labeled as item 8 part of the time and item 9 part of the time.
It is
right.
Item
in the current PCNRs, it's labeled, it's on, which are online, it's number 8, Larry.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 9 because of this other stuff being introduced. I see that now.
Yeah. Well, I think we can massage this into either one or two or however many little things we want to do it, but it all seems sort of be related to me.
Yeah.
And it looks go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say I would agree. I think I would just make 7A, 7B, or just no even distinction. You could just all under 7 firearm.
Okay, and it looks like under the hunting, we have a just input from the Hall Committee, column 1, and column 3 says the same thing, and nothing from column 2. So that's apparently okay with everybody. It says the same verbiage.
Jody, this is Dave Turley. I need to hop in here and mention the fact that I talked to my insurance carrier that I work with as a contractor and asked him about the designated shooting area on common area or a common area at the ranch. And he said that if the association designates an area, then we come under liability, and if there was a claim, we would be dropped once the claim was settled, and then we would have to get a new policy. So that's why I was against not having a designated area until I found out about this, and then I was in favor of going off the ranch to shoot. And so that's why if someone asks, the managers, where can we go shooting, the managers are supposed to send them off the ranch. So that's something
to consider.
So I see what they're saying is what – in dealing with other insurances before, companies before on different venues out in the woods, that they're saying because we designated a certain area to allow shooting on the ranch, if something were to happen at that area because it is designated, then once any lawsuit does come into play, our insurance will drop because it was our designated area and therefore we're responsible.
Yep, that's what I
understand. And isn't it true right now that our designated area is not on the ranch?
Our designated area is go outside the ranch and go shooting.
Go shoot over at the gravel pit has been the main area the last few years that's where they can shoot against an embankment, and it's not on our private property.
Right, and the wording is supposed to be, a suggestion of leaving the ranch or insisting and leave it at that. And then the comment of some people go and shoot at the gravel pit. Unfortunately, if people shoot from the gravel pit, they're going to shoot right over that hill right towards the ranch house. But that's, another issue.
So are we kind of all thinking in agreement that we need to remove those words of designated area in that?
Well, or do we say a designated area off of the private ground?
That's good.
But if you say a designated
area,
then there is no designated area, then there's no place to go. I mean,
that's true.
Okay,
but even around the BLM, because if people say, hey, just get off the private ground, there's a lot of BLM we really would not want them shooting, that is very close and still in line of sight of the private ground.
Okay, but isn't the gravel underneath our easement, our property boundary, even though it's BLM?
It's in our grazing lease, but we would not be liable for hunting or for firearms or anything. And it is one area that, with that embankment, I'm not overly concerned about a bullet coming over in the same direction as a ranch house. I mean, you'd have to be shooting at a 45 degree in the air, which, it's one of the areas that's close to the ranch house that would be appropriate to shoot.
One of the dangers to consider is the fact, like Davey pointed out on the insurance company, it doesn't matter where you designate. I can designate a shooting area in China, and if there's an accident, because I designated that as my designated area, I'm liable.
Yeah.
It's on public ground, private ground, wherever I designate, the lawsuit can follow me because I pointed that out as the authorized or designated area.
Does that happen if you suggest to a member, if they ask, that if you give them a suggestion that they go
exactly
off property, off our grazing permits, to a public ground, that did the managers at that point still?
Well, and that's why I think this is one that we really need to have that legal review, both by, you know, the insurance company or an attorney, to know if that is true. If we kind of encourage people to go one area to contain them, but that's not on the association ground, what is our liability?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, exactly.
We need to work on that one.
Yeah.
All right.
I like that idea. I'm in agreement.
Yeah, let's revisit it.
Okay. Moving on. Number 8. Violation penalty. As you can see, the difference in this one is the last paragraph in column 1. The directors and officers of the association are empowered, as provided in the association bylaws, to assess and collect annual dues for the maintenance of association-owned or controlled property. All rights and privileges of any member shall be suspended by the association upon non-payment by that member and assess association dues. Comments?
That kind of tied in, this is Phil, that kind of tied into, if people were, you know, in arrears and they wanted to vote, or they wanted to rent cabins, or they wanted to do this or that, if they were way out of line their annual dues, then you could do that. They're just being specific, saying that you could do that.
Let me ask a quick question. Earlier we just stated that 8 was going to get changed to 7A, and now we're making it 8 again?
No. The hunting part under 7 is now 7A. We had not got to 8 yet. So 8 is violation. And across the column there, you'll see 8 in the first left.
Jody, that's 9.
No, 9's
a violation.
No, I'm looking at...
Oh, wait.
Well, okay, the middle column is mislabeled. Everybody look at it. I think there's two of them that say 9 and two of them that say 8. I think it's a typo.
Okay, but I was referring back to the one that's on the web that I printed off and brought with me.
Oh, well.
I'm looking at CNRs from the web.
And the rest of us
the
are using great
thing.
Let's not argue over numbering. The reason that right now violation and penalty is number 8. If that part was added, it had pushed it to 9. That middle column, Vance, if it was accepted, would stay 8 because there is not added hunting area. If we make hunting a 7A, then violation and penalty would be labeled 8. But it doesn't matter what the number is on it. I like the idea of trying, when we can, to keep the numbering the same as it has been on the existing ones, which would keep violation and penalty still labeled number 8.
Yeah, and I agree, but on the grid comparison thing, I was just trying to point out they've made a typo.
Yeah,
I was concerned about that on the group comparison. I didn't even see that was a difference. I was just going off what was stated earlier in the meeting. So
right.
I was just asking for some clarification. I didn't want everybody to get their, you know, their zip ties tight and tough too tight there. So sorry.
So on violation and penalty, the only difference is that bottom section I just read in column number 1, which looks like it ties into number 9 on our current CCNRs. So might have to review that a little bit to see how that compares to the ones we've got, because 9 was left out. The restriction imposed for non-payment of annual association dues was left out of the comparison sheet. They didn't go into that. But it looks like it's been covered in this bottom section of 8. So we can make the bottom section part of number 9, the restrictions imposed. I'd say we do that to keep that continuity going.
Well, is this the actual issue that we need to address as far as giving the board more authority to collect? Is this the whole nutshell right here?
I think it is. I think it's the clarifying point so that there's no question that it's specific.
Right, because this has been something that's been mentioned for a couple, 3 years fairly heavily now, and is one of the top flight things that needed to get fixed.
Yeah, but it should be down in number, 16 or whatever as far as assessment obligation and budgeting and those things.
Yeah, it comes into play. Yeah, you're right.
It is repeated down in delinquent dues, however that works out. So I think this is just kind of mentioning it.
Yeah.
Which of those four columns do you want to use? On number 8, violation penalty, which of those four do you prefer?
It's an open question for everybody.
Well, they're all the same except for column 1 for the hall or the 2 thing. They're all the same, are they not, except for that added part?
Correct. Excuse me. I was opting for column number 1 on that from what I read. And again, this might be still addressed in number 16 when we get there. But we can look at that when we get to 16. But does anybody have a problem with that extra part added on to number 8? It might be duplication of what's in 16, but we can find that out when we get to that point.
Yeah, I think the remedies are more specific in 16, but this does just mention that when you're talking about violation and penalty, it just kind of says the board can do it, and then in 16 it says how to do it.
That's correct. I'm jumping ahead to 16 myself here, and I agree with that.
So, is there any issue or problem with column number 1 on that being said like it's said? Can we agree on that, or shall we leave that open for discussion?
You're referring to column number 1. That's the existing old thing, and then you refer to halls as column number 1.
No, column number 1. Column number 1 is Hall's committee. What I refer to as the left-hand column is the original PCNRs. So column number 1, which I clarified a couple columns ago, was Hall's committee.
Yeah, but I see what Dale's saying. It's not the leftmost column.
Correct. That's correct. The leftmost column is just the current PCNR, so I'm not...
Why can't we go left as
is
1,
it,
two,
is it column
three,
number
four?
1?
let's rule out the confusion and go with column 1 as the PCNRs and 2, 3, 4.
So is everybody okay with column number 2 as it's written? And then go into more detail when we get to 16.
Well, the thing I don't understand, again, I like the word where it refers to the association bylaws, because we've got to tie the PCNRs to the corporate bylaws so that they don't conflict with each other. But as far as authority, what does that give the board that it doesn't, that's not given up in that same paragraph, or the previous paragraph where it said the board shall have the right and authority to prosecute any proceedings at law or in equity and either prevent said membership from violating these bylaws?
Well, that would be a question for somebody who's actually pushed through a lien and has, and I've heard this multiple times, that our lawyer says, that we need to fix this.
Well, and I think that fix is more detailed down in that lower number 16. So, if an attorney says, yeah, it would be better to clarify it, I'm happy to add that language and use the column 2. Or if he says, look, that's a little redundant and confusing to say it twice in 2 same paragraphs, then he may have something. I don't know that anybody does anybody have major heartburn or conflict with that, or let's just get it worded as most effectively with, some legal, advice to finalize.
Yeah, let's run it by the lawyer. Pick column 2 and run it by the lawyer.
Column 2, a lot of that stuff was at the suggestion of the attorney at the time.
I don't mind instead of adding a whole separate paragraph, adding the words, you know, that they have the right, you know, the where it says the board shall have the right and authority to prosecute and collect assessments and fees or something. You know, we just need two or three more words to clarify that they have the right, you know, not that they have the right to prosecute violators, but, you know, to define that as, you know, we don't have the authority to throw anybody in jail no matter what. It's the authority. Our only recourse is to penalize them by fees.
Well, that's sort of what it says.
The other important thing about this one that's different, we can, where the party's added on at the bottom where it starts off the directors, we can, that's just repetition of what's up top. But where it goes on to further clarify, and this is, I think, the difference between this and 16, is that the comment, the sentence in there, all rights and privileges of any member shall be suspended by the association upon non-payment by that member of the assessed association dues. That's the main difference between 1, 2, and 3. So everything is covered under 16, really just that one sentence.
I think, I'm trying to remember, you know, things come back. I think the attorney told us that it by referencing here in the protective covenants, the bylaws, it makes a better link somehow to when you, the actual mechanics of enforcing it. But I truly can't remember all the legal detail.
Okay.
At what point during the penalty are they, when do you take away their right to be able to vote, use the cabins, or whatever else? What's the timeline? Is it stated in there somewhere that I've missed?
It was stated in the original PCNRs as if they have not paid by March 1st, March 2nd would start where their privileges would be suspended.
So this year, if you didn't pay by March 2nd, you couldn't use the cabins this year if you booked it?
No, I think the privileges are restored as soon as you make full payment.
Right. You cannot book cabins or vote if you have delinquent amounts due, whether that's assessment or penalty fees. If you owe the ranch money for whatever, your rights are suspended until you pay in full.
Okay. Right. Just stating, just one simple question that maybe needs to be on here. I mean, Linda's already taken reservations for this year, but we're waiting for assessments to all come in. At what point can you not? I mean, can you not make a reservation until you send your money in right now?
January 15. I have reservations for this year. If your assessments are not paid by January 15, those reservations are off of the calendar.
Okay. Is it stated somewhere in this? Do we need to do that?
It's stated on the invoice for the assessments.
But it should be in the bylaws, not in the particular.
I agree.
It's, you know, that's just on an invoice, but it's not one of our rules and regulations or our bylaws or something. I mean, I just think it might need to be there.
So maybe that bottom sentence needs to be where it's at. All rights and privileges of any member shall be suspended by association upon non-payment. And then maybe put the dates in there as far as by January 15th. We can go on to that later, but it looks like that needs to be in there then.
Well, I think the reference to the bylaw, that is, I agree that it should be in writing, not just on the invoice, but it should be in the bylaws that regulates the membership, not on the PCNRs that regulates the land.
Okay. So that's something to address in the bylaws. Is
correct.
That agreeable to everybody?
That last comment was why we put that word inseparably, because there was a difference made then between membership and land ownership. That's an example of it.
Okay.
Patsy just mentioned something. What about if the taxes aren't paid at that point, too?
But we do not collect taxes. The county, anybody can be in good standing if they have not paid their property tax. That process is completely separate.
Can I jump in here? Under the rules and regulations, the January 15th language is already there.
Thank you. I was just heading there to check that out.
So you guys can take a look at that when you have time and see if you agree with how that's handled.
Okay. All right. So do we move on from this?
Yep, number 10.
Excellent. All right, moving on.
So what was the finalized verdict in on number 9?
I think we're going in circles talking about basically the same thing, whether it's said in two sentences kind of redundant or modified to put a few of those words like referencing the bylaws and referencing the authority to collect fees. I think that that just needs to be is some wordsmithing that maybe some we can work on and that legal counsel may have a recommendation.
And we can also look at number 16 when we get there and see what we think we're missing so we can revisit this then. But definitely leave it open for changes or discussion on number 8.
9.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right, moving on to number 10. It looks like everything was fine on that one. There was no input. Oh, wait a minute. 10 dropped down to 11 spot here. Nope. All right, so straight across the board, there's nothing in the Clarkson committee on number 10. Right below that, it says division of property, but that's actually number 11 on the next one down. So you can correct that while we're there.
One question on that. It says improvements. Does this mean that this is to control DSROA, or does this mean lot 55? Is this improvements on all 300 lots, or is this only on DSROA improvements?
From what the current CC&RS reads, all improvements to property described in Attached Schedule A shall control.
So it would regulate private lots, saying that anything that any improvements or building you make on any individual lot still needs to comply with the county ordinance.
Why do we police that?
Okay, are we okay on that one, or we need to discuss that one?
I'm still trying to read and compare the things. I don't think we police it. We just make a state. We're making a statement there. It's a clarification thing, but I'm not sure. I'm just trying to read it and see the real difference.
Looks like the same from both column 1 and column 2.
It's probably it's a protection thing. I mean, I wouldn't want somebody with a, for instance, unpermitted, not installed by licensed contractor septic system right next to me, for instance.
The difference is right at the very last sentence we're saying amendments made to these restrictions when properly adopted by vote of, and then it says in the other column 2 and 4 to these protective covenants. So it's a little, instead of saying restrictions, it's just more, I think it was part of the clarifying the attorney wanted to, you're talking about protective covenants now.
Okay.
And when properly adopted by vote of said association. Because it leaves off of said association in the original. And it talks, and that's the only difference in wording.
Okay.
It's just a little clearer.
Are we all good on that, on column number 2? Looks like column number 2 is the same as column number 4.
Yes.
I thought column 2 and 3 looked identical.
No, there's not
all 3.
There's nothing in 3.
Is there any issues on number 10 at all, or we can accept that and move on?
I think it's fine. It's just a question of whether we, as an association, want to police or interfere or give leadership to what happens on your personal lot.
And, yes, we want to enforce the county ordinance. If the neighbors, and this is an area that's been violated, and we're pulling in a bunch of single wides over in Podunk, and you say, hey, you can't do that. And your neighbor says, well, what authority do you have, say, as a member of the association, it says that we enforce the county ordinance, and we don't police it, but that reinforces and refers to and would encourage them to call the building department and turn it over to the county.
Yeah, completely agree.
So again, we're here to modify or change something in the existing ordinance if it's needed. This is one that's in there basically like that, other than changing one word for clarification. I don't think that it would behoove us to delete it at this point after it's been on the books for 30 years.
Are we
good with this?
Yeah, let's go with 10.
And we're going with 10, column 2?
5.
Or 4? Both? Okay.
All right.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Now, you'll notice from here on out, column number 3 is going to be mismarked for the numbers. So just follow along. It still has the same titles and the same information. It's just got different numbers. So division of property. Let me catch my note here real quick. Okay, well, between, looks like number, column number 2 and column number 3 and column number 4 are all the same. So I think we're all in agreement with that pretty much. Any new things to pop up with that or discuss on that?
Well, I think you're right. I think we all agreed then.
Now check through that. Looks like we all agreed. Anybody?
I don't like this language of when allowed by county zoning. We have a hard enough time regulating the fluctuations in our board and memberships, and to refer and be bound by that, because again, our county zoning ordinance has changed back and forth multiple times with different county commissioners or different people on planning and zoning, and I think we make our decision, and it is binding on Deer Springs members, and we don't create the confusion or ambiguity by saying when allowed by zoning ordinance. Again, I don't. That may not be carried over into all those others. Yeah, they all say when allowed. So if they allowed it in 1990 and we do it, then they change their rule and you can't do it in 2000, so then some other members can't do what they want, and then 10 years later it gets changed back. It's only going to confuse things at Deer Springs where people said, well, hey, my neighbor did it, and you say, well, you could do it at that time. And again, if 5 different people go to the county today and ask, can I do it or not, you're going to get 5 different answers.
Okay, what's wrong with the column 2, 3, and 4?
Well, they still say when allowed by county zoning.
I don't think we can regulate what the county says.
What's that?
I don't think we can regulate what the county says.
I think we don't refer to it. We just say this is what you can do. It doesn't need to be said that if the county says we can't do it,
then we should.
Then you can't do it.
Right. So that's all it's saying is we need to abide with what the county says. I think that's why it's in there.
That was in the original PCNR too, so maybe we need to find out if we...
No, that was changed in 97. It was not in the originals.
I'm sorry, in 97, yes.
I just, in working with Kane County and knowing the fluctuation, it's going to be very confusing and impossible to regulate.
So we want to look at that for...
Well, or if you change the word when to if, you know, you can do it if county law allows it, but not when, because when indicates a timeline that is going to change back and forth.
How about if we change it to if county regulations allow it?
Well, I'll just say change the word when to if.
Right. I agree with Ben. I see where he's going with that.
Yeah, I agree too.
What he's saying is basically when he said when, well, it was back then it was, so that was when. So he said if. I'm with him. I agree. I can go with that on the if.
Change noted. Got it in here.
Go for it.
All right, moving on. Is everybody good with that?
Yes.
Okay. Moving on, number 12, easements. Okay, we have a little bit of difference here between columns 2 and 3. To review this real quick.
The big difference is 75% or 66%, and I can't remember the background on why we did that at the time. Not very helpful on that one.
Well, I can throw out a theory. Utility easement, you know, we sort of specify those at lot lines and other things, and utilities are utilities. Whereas if somebody, say, wanted to blade in a road and asked for an easement for that, that wouldn't be covered by the utility easement language. Does that make any sense at all? It's the only thing I can think of.
Uh-huh.
Right. That's, yeah, the difference is, you know, a utility easement or an ingress egress access easement, which would be a road. And so that, you know, again, they've added in that second column, you know, if as long as it's an underground utility, that the, you know, you'd have, the board would have the authority to do something there. But if it's going to be anything beyond that, it needs to go to the vote of the membership is what it's saying, I think.
Yeah.
Again, a 75% vote, that's even higher than the two-thirds majority, you know, a supermajority that we need to change these bylaws, so.
If we can't get 75% to vote, can we?
That's the problem.
Again, it's just 75% of the votes cast. So if people don't vote, it doesn't count for or against.
Maybe the concern was that if we give away, basically if we grant an easement over association property, we're kind of giving away a common asset. Maybe that was the issue.
That looks like that.
Well,
true.
Well, I don't know that those are the issues. I think that last column 4 tried to specify that it was a membership at a regular special membership meeting, and that's column 4, whereas column 2, it just says cast by membership. I don't know. I'm a little confused. So.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Phil, and it does. It says that it goes on to say, other than utility easements, no easement over association common property may be granted to any public or private entity or individual without approval by a two-third majority vote of the membership at a regular or special membership meeting. I think we need to ditch that wording, myself is my opinion, and go with column number 2 on that. Just says that now we can change the percentage if we want, but to leave that as granted to any public or private entity without approval by a percentage vote of cast by the membership. Doesn't have to be in a meeting or a special meeting.
Right.
What that says, though, on the other hand, is, and I can't give you an exact thing, but there are times when a roadway easement is practical to go across the corner of one of the association properties or something, and I would think that the board of directors, being on the ground, knowing why and when and how, would be able to make those kind of minor decisions without going back to an annual meeting and requiring that kind of a vote. It just isn't justified in my thinking on making some of the changes.
I agree in principle with what you said, Dale, but I worry about how do we decide if it's just a little thing or if it's a bigger than a little thing. And to some people that have dealing with them, it's a really big thing. And so I know it's more encumbering to a point, but it's more protective too of each member's lots and rights.
Well, let me give you an example.
Phil, that's the reason why we're voted in as a board. And we make those decisions, like Dale said, small. You
try Let me give an example. Somebody in the last 20 years moved the road up along the west side of the well field from the county road onto association property. Now, all of you have been there. You know the fence was changed. You know the driveway was changed. And there's a driveway on out across to the well. And what we're saying is don't you dare touch that until an annual meeting comes and the membership of the whole program approves that driveway change.
No, that's not at all true, because we have not, there's no easement or roadway document granted, and we, that is on association ground for association use. We can build a road. The board and the hired management, we have not granted that easement to any specific lot owner or any outside entity.
Neither does this say that.
Well, it does say the association through its board may grant private and or public utility easements.
Right. And so we're granting it to a private person or a public utility. And we're talking, you know, a written easement document that's recorded and binds us. I mean, you're correct in that road was built, but there's nothing recorded that if we wanted, we could go and disc that road up and move it or change it or do away with it. And we wouldn't have a member or anybody else saying, hey, I have a legal right. You cannot take that away.
Okay, let me give you another example. The county came to us and said, hey, we want to avoid going down through ranch headquarters. Will you give us an easement up over the top of the hill at the end of the runway and on down the other side? And that was approved and deeded to the county. Wait for a year or two for annual meetings and the 70 and all the members to vote on it. I don't think it's practical.
Well, I for that reason, I do that would be an approach that would fall under this, and that's why I like what Jody says. I don't like column four for sure that it has to wait for an annual meeting, to have a mail out ballot vote or something. I do like the column two better than four.
This is Vance.
Right.
Can I jump in for a second, Vance? You know, as I look at the three columns, I see this as pretty much it was an attempt to get a membership vote on things like this. That's what it looks like to me, one way or another. Because column three references no membership vote. Column two and column four do.
Okay, here's an idea for that applies to this that I've had thought before. See if this helps at all in this decision making, because we do have a diverse membership and a diverse, board of directors, that some of these things like this would be a case to have this, that this cannot be done without a whatever percent vote of cast of the members or a unanimous vote of the board. And so we don't need to go, if the board is absolutely unanimous, and all will vote for it, so that if there's people that represent different factions or different neighborhoods of the membership, then one vote would kill it. It needs to go to the members. But if the board, it's a common sense thing and everybody is unanimously in favor of it, 100%, I think that the board should be trusted in that strength without needing to go to the membership. If there is a not consensus on the board, then it would default and the membership would need to decide.
This is Phil. I like that.
Well, we need to, if we're going to do something like that, we also need to throw language in restricting the acreage of said whatever. Don't you think?
Say that again or clarify that. What do you mean?
Something like that, we need to make sure, and it was mentioned earlier, that this is a small, and which would have to define, easement that we're talking about, not acres and acres and acres of land, you know, changing from one status to another.
Well, but again, we're not, this is still not selling land or giving away use. It's still an easement. So whether it's a utility easement or even a roadway, whether it's 100 feet or 1,000 feet, we're not talking giving out 10 acres of land or something.
Right.
Well, and so I just see where, if the board is unanimous on it and they all see good sense in it. I, of all the boards I've watched for 30 years, if it was something that there was some controversy on, there's always going to be one or two of the board members that just say, look, I just can't feel good about it. I'm not putting my name on that until it's either rewritten, changed, and they can hold up the process until it is fixed, or it, you know, the only, you know, those that are pushing it can go around them or over them by then saying, well, let's send it out to the members. And again, if that's a mail-in ballot or something, a lot of those to have a postcard that goes out and a deadline in, say, 30 days to you mark the box if you don't return it. And so I do like this, the language in number two, whether it's 75%, but of the cast votes, because if people, those that won't pay attention and even vote, should not have a say for or against.
So should we revisit this thing instead of getting bogged down?
Yeah, I think Ben had a really good idea there, and I've got a couple of little things to go along with it. So we could put this up for discussion later. I think that's a good idea, though, Ben.
Okay, so my proposal, and then we'll, you know, everybody just think on it when you can revisit, is just at the end of this to add or unanimous vote of the board.
Of the entire board.
Yep.
That's what unanimous means.
And
yeah.
When we put that, when we put that,
four that board members, there, 5 members present, then it's not the majority of the member.
Right. No, it's not just the not all that are there. It's all 7 members.
Right.
Okay.
That's the only thing I want to stick to.
Well, okay. Is everybody agreeing with that? We're good?
I'm good.
Then we can work the verbiage up on that and go through it again. All right. Anybody else have any comments or discussion on that one at this time? All right, moving on to number 12, dwellings. We're pretty much the same across the board on that. Anybody have any discussion on that one?
And we finally fixed the two dwellings thing, thanks to Dirk, so we're good on that.
Except it's number 13, not number 12, correct?
It's number
13.
Sorry, I was reading the wrong column. That's number 13. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
So it does pretty much in a nutshell state you can have a goat pen and a chicken shed and everything else as long as you don't have more than two dwellings, correct?
Okay, moving on.
Moving on.
Moving on. Number. Let me look at my sheet. Okay, here's where we separate a little bit from our original PCRs and go into different numbers. We have on our regular PCRs, our current ones, dealing with the invalid of any provisions contained in this document, just a bunch of legal mumbo-jumbo. And amendments follow that as number 15. But here we're going to jump into a new section of rules and regs on number, what we're calling number 14. And I have this as, when I went through these columns, I'm like, I'm looking at number, column number 4 as a good way to go, but I'm thinking this is going to be one of those things we're going to discuss in quite detail. Any input?
Yes, this was the part that was missing from our protective covenants referring to rules and regulations. It was pretty important that we don't have it, but it's kind of complicated, all right?
It is. Do we put that on our note? We notate it for discussion at another time because we're still trying to just, you know, determine what our boulders are. And this is definitely one of the things that needs to be looked at in more depth.
Phil?
Yeah?
Did one of the attorneys at the time pretty much write this thing, or do you remember?
Yeah. I think most of all of these changes were written by the attorney, but we did customize it knowing our own situation better than he, as far as maybe calling out a few specifics like the 2004-5 year and et cetera. But I'd have to read it and reread it a few more times to get the gist of it for right now. But we didn't just come up with the idea. These are things that he said were missing. We didn't have this part about rules and regulations and tying in, and you know, in our protective covenants. So.
Right, right. The reason I asked is this is a from scratch one. It didn't even exist apparently.
Right, right, right. And so, I think pretty much what we have there in column two is what was suggested by the attorney, with maybe minor additions or subtractions from us. And then you can see Dale's group read it over and pretty much wanted most of the stuff in there. And then our attempt to compromise somewhat and merge the two was column four.
I think column four is good.
So I don't know, maybe do we read it, all of us read it over for a minute of silence and read and then talk about it? What do we do?
If we want to read through it, we'll look at that right here. We might be able to just decide on column number four, but let's look at it. Y'all go ahead and take a minute to review that.
The left hand, the right hand column, I think is very acceptable.
And I do too.
The future.
I would agree.
Okay.
I agree too. Okay, Jody.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I stepped to the bathroom real quick. Can we go back to dwellings real quick? Or was that everybody in agreement on that, or was it something that we thought we would revisit because there's questions?
Let's finish up 14 real quick because we're right there. I think
14's done. We all go with the fourth, the right-hand column.
Okay.
I'm sorry. May I interject here? This is Linda. Do you want to do a majority vote on this to change rules and regulations or a unanimous vote?
No, that's a majority of the members to override the board.
Okay.
So the board has the authority to change those and do that, but if they do something that the members are not happy with, then the members can, by a majority, override the board. That's just where they can, change it back or alter it.
And that's the majority of the members' votes cast, correct? We need to put that wording in there.
What was that?
Right. I agree. Any time that we have that almost, it's got to be the majority of votes cast, because we may not even get a majority of the members to vote at times.
Right. Okay,
and we cannot be, hampered or held up because of something that we can't even get half the members to respond to.
Right, perfect. Okay.
So a majority of votes cast.
Right.
On 14, rules and regulations.
That last little part, you might change the percentage to majority, but that language in column two, the last three or four lines, kind of clarifies that. It says votes cast by members. And then it does say then the board will have the authority to adopt it.
Okay. All right, so we're in agreement with that, and then we go back to dwellings. But, yes, Ben, we were all in agreement on the dwelling, unless you had something to add.
Well, I still see problems in referring to if Kane County allows. I mean, that's a given, and that's changed. You know, they were kind of not allowing, they were, and then, you know, we changed these bylaws just here in the last year or two, you know, because we had gone back to one family dwelling. That's one issue that I just soon take that out. If partially because if we promise our members or each of us as members, 300 members have the right to do two dwellings, and then the county changes their ordinance, we should have the right to go to the county and say, whoa, whoa, there's 300 tax-paying parcels here that already have a guaranteed right. You just can't take that away from us. You want to do it in other areas. You need to exempt Deer Springs Ranch subdivision from that.
So do you want to cross out those five words?
Yep.
Let's do it.
Okay, that's one thing. The second then is, what is the legal, does anybody know, and I have some reference, but on this two-story limitation. I hate a lot of these limitations. I am an architectural guy, and when we start saying, well, we don't want something too tall, and then we find out, well, to have a nice high-ceilinged building, we may be above the 20-foot restriction or something. For example, if it's two stories above ground, then on which side of the building? If in the hillside, a lot of people are building the walkout basement. The way a lot of people would interpret this, cabin number one violates this rule.
True.
And I don't want to be stuck with, you can't have a walkout basement and then a ground level and then a loft third story. That, you know, and a lot of homes, whether you look in anywhere, there's a lot of beautiful structures that take advantage of the view on one side. So it's got to be above two stories on the uphill side, or just take that out.
I think it should be taken out. Number one, we all have big parcels. We're not going to obstruct anybody's view.
Right, right.
Oh, I'm in agreement to take that line out. What about that?
Somebody ought to tell Brent about his 10-story brothel.
Active dwelling on the very last week.
On number 13, you know, Ben, this is kind of your area of expertise. Should we craft some language offline, you know, about this?
Yeah, we can. I mean, I can think about it more. I just missed that and wanted to bring that up, that, you know, this two-story above ground level is very restrictive. You know, in some cases, especially some of these hillside lots at Deer Springs, you know, any of the parcels up there have at least a decent building spot, but there's a lot of them where, in order to maximize the views and have cost effective, you may want to go up instead of out. And you know, I don't want somebody to be limited to this.
Right, right. So we need to kick around, you know, again, we don't need to do it right now. Subject to, you know, existing conditions on the lot, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada.
I would just take that sentence out. No structure above two-story, just strike that. The county building ordinance and the building department will still regulate. They have to turn in plans. If it's something that's not safe or doesn't function to protect society, the Kane County Building Department will work through that.
I agree.
And they already have something that will restrict. They already have a height ordinance that says you can't have an 80-foot story building up there. You can't have a 4-story, 5-story building up there, no matter what, anywhere in Kane County. So I would just change the one word, strike, if allowed in Kane County on the first issue, and then strike, no structure may be more than 2 stories above ground level on that second page.
Okay, is that agreeable to everybody?
Which one was the one we were going with those corrections, Ben?
What's that?
Which line column are we going with
those? Go with the right-hand column, kind of like we have, Ben, but just strike those.
Okay.
Hey,
this is Bill.
Okay. All right, where were we? Rule. Okay, we were
County.
We passed number 14. We agreed on that. Okay, so we're on number 15?
Yes.
Take a minute to go over that. This had some detailed verbiage in it. Simon thought that column number 4 sums it up nicely. Am I missing something from column number 2, Phil?
Well, I was just reading through it. It goes to the other side. You know, the next page it has a lot. Column number 4 just says they're liable. I think column 2... I need to read it a little more, but it talks about it kind of how you can make the member liable.
I have an observation on column 2. Maybe more of you who are involved more closely with this. If column 2 had been in effect during the donkey lawsuit, would we have had a problem? Think about it in those terms. I'm reading it, and I'm not an expert, but I'm thinking if we'd had that language, the donkey issue would have been moot. I mean, not that they wouldn't have tried, but still, you know how people are, but nevertheless.
Well, we at least could have easily countered and said, you cannot name DSROA in a lawsuit without naming Mike and Kathy Duvall at the same time, which as friends would have probably canceled the thing.
Okay, so there's that advantage to that big chunk of legalese there, in other words.
Right. The only other thing I see, and I haven't read all of that second column in detail, but, you know, on the wording on the right-hand side, I think it sounds good, but it does not specifically talk about contractors, and that's what I think, really, that's the majority of things, that whether somebody's up there and has a contractor that then is dumping trash, or some of the issues we've had in hauling on the association roads, you know, this is something that we've worked, you know, several times with Phil Hall and some of the hauling that he's done. So then they've been good to, you know, try to respect that and help minimize some of the damage to the roads. But that's not a guest or a friend, but it should be contractor in there in addition, because that's where I've seen this actually be a problem on some of the, you know, assets.
This is Phil, and I would agree with that. To insert the contractor thing. I mean, like you say, whenever there's been any thing, we've tried to work it out. There's not been a problem in the end, but
right.
But I think I'm pretty sure all of this legalese and all this other stuff in here was by suggestion of that attorney we had at the time.
And this might be part of a state requirement too. Who knows?
Okay, so are we all agreeing with that and just add contractor in there? Do you still want to leave it? Do we need to discuss it more at another date? Or?
Yeah, no, we need to discuss it because I do like some of the authority it gives in the second column that if there's a problem, then the board has the authority to damage the, you know, repair the damage and then bill the member or whatever.
Yeah, okay. So we'll do a little discussion on that. Sounds like we're pretty well close on that one.
Most of these things, if we just say you can't do this, if we don't have a consequence or how we enforce it, then it's, you know, it's. I don't want to debate that every time. I want it to be clear that, yeah, if you don't, then the board can hire somebody to come and fix it and send you the bill and until you know, and put it on your account. And then your membership rights are waived or you know, put on hold until you clear that account.
Yeah, so let's just
on that.
Let's just massage that with the contractor stuff in there, and I think sounds like we are pretty close on that.
Okay, are we moving on?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Okay. All right, now we're quote-unquote off the grid from here on forward, too, as far as the next one on our current CCNRs is the amendment. But now we're skipping, we're going to number 16, which would be our item number 16 on the new ones. On the left-hand column, it says number 9 for restriction imposed by non-payment. It all deals with number 8. It follows number 8, so it might just have to be like 8A. No, it can be 9 because we didn't use a 9 earlier. So this would be number 9. So across your page, just put in number, take out 16 and put 9. Because this would be.
So it would actually move up to the 9th place.
Yes.
So the intent of new 16 was to replace old 9 or augment it?
Let me look at old 9 here. It would be to, about, I'm not sure.
Well, the old 9 we left set up for a discussion with legal in my notes here.
Right. So let's see, again, how it's numbered or whether we shift it is kind of the logic and the flow that the legal will have an opinion of what is most standard market, standard in the market.
Yeah, let's let that one go through on with legal.
Do we want any input on that before it goes to that?
Yeah, let's just go over the topic and read the meaning of it, not worried about the number.
Yes, okay, all right. Everybody take a minute on this one, too, because it's got quite a lot.
Did you mean to pass over that item 15 in the third column above 16?
No, actually, that one looks like it was also part of, it was just part of the accountability of members, which we just discussed.
Okay, thank you.
It's just numbered wrong.
This is Phil Hall. Here we kind of come back to this whole concept of the separability or inseparability of membership and lot ownership. And if you look to, columns 3 and 4, or 2 and 4 are fairly much the same. But the second line in under creation of assessment obligation, each owner of any membership. And see, if you look over at column 4, each member as defined herein, meaning, and it was defined what a member was. So, I don't know if it's pertinent, you know, at the time it was a hot deal. I don't know if Dale has feelings on that. But again, we're trying to drive home the fact that if you own a lot, you're a member. And to be a member, you own a lot. And that you can't sell or separate memberships from the property. And, you know, we haven't had any discussion much on that for a long, long time. And so I don't know that anybody really sees or feels the difference as much as we did at the time. But that's the big difference, and that's the thing that we need to discuss is that we feel comfortable in what is a member, and is membership and lot ownership the same? So there's my 2 cents.
Yeah, I'm feeling to input on that is I do like the verbiage of each owner of any lot is deemed to covenant and agree to pay the association, where the column number 3 is each owner of any membership. Well, that is disconnecting the membership from the lot see that.
On that, and that's why column two is talking about the lot. Number three is talking about the membership. Number four is the appropriate way here to just refer to as a member as defined. And in the earlier area, we'll work through how to define a member and clarify that a member there includes both your stock membership in the association and your lot, and they're inseparably connected.
Yes.
I agree.
Well, I guess we need to hear from Dale on this one, on if you accept, like, if you're okay with the column number four verbiage, because this is one of our hot spots. So, it, you know, definitely do we need to, are we over the hot spot, or do we still need to?
No, but we'll handle that when we debate through what a member is.
Right.
And that's fine for the present time. Yeah.
The very end of those of this section, there's this little part in italics of the board will also have the authority to place a lien and foreclose the same on lots. That was power that we needed to be more specific on how these things were enforced. So I think that's, I'm just pointing out that's an important thing, that we can place a lien and we can foreclose.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. That's an important issue right there, because in column four it says when it's past due for 12 months. Column three says when it's past due for 12 months it can foreclose in 36 months. I think we talked about this in one of our last meetings about when do we start to foreclose. That's what we're talking about, is when do we start to foreclosure on the lots. When do we start the proceedings? And I think that's what needs to be specified in this section right here. It's talking about the creation of the assessment, and then and the last part of it is talking about the foreclosure on it, or the lien. So when do we set that timeline?
And I think, this is Dale, it creates a problem if the delinquent situation is allowed to go on for 3 or 4 years. So I think we should go back to probably the 12-month position. I'm not sure it improves very much after 24 months or 36 months.
I agree.
So there again, I think we need to...
Yeah, I think the 36 months is out there. I don't mind doing the lien or whatever in 24 and foreclosure, or in 12 and 20, foreclosure in 24, or not even determine when the thing is. The reason, just, you know, the reference and the reason we were talking even the 36 is to clarify that we need to start foreclosure in 36 months, because if not, again, that's year three. If we let it go any further than that, if they're not paying the assessments or liens, a lot of times they're not paying the taxes either, and that's the only assessment or lien that is superior to our association fees, and it may take a year or two to get that through foreclosure with the legal issues. But if the taxes aren't paid for 5 years, then it will go to the tax sale and we all lose out.
So that's the reason for the, you know, let's not delay, let's not mess around, let's get it done, and that's like 12 months.
I think we can leave it still at the 12 months. If for some, you know, if they're trying to work and trying to do it, then the board has the authority to work with them. But if it's somebody says, hey, I'm just not going to pay like we've had before, then yeah, there's no reason to wait 36 months. Either don't put it in there or at least tighten it up to 24 months.
Let me ask a quick question, Linda. You can help answer on this one here. So after 12 months, do we send them out a, listen, lot owner 229 or whatever, you're getting your 12-month, your assessment's been due for 12 months now. Do you give them a timeline as to you have 30 days before we start the lien procedures, and at that point your assessment will be charged for the lien cost? Is there such
yes.
a thing?
Yes, I put a lien on the property and notify them of that lien. And there is also
that.
Do you give them, in other words, do you give them a forewarning that they're getting that that's going to happen within X amount of days, and at that point
yes.
there's going to be a penalty of X amount of dollars for filing that lien?
Yes.
And does that need to be listed in here?
No, that's still part of our process. It's changed a little, but, Mark, a lot of times we've actually mailed them a copy of the lien and said, this is a lien that will be recorded if you don't bring this current or work out a payment plan within 30 days. And then if we don't hear from them, we go ahead and record it. But we try to save the cost and all the headache by at least, you know, threatening them. But if they have a lien and then we go to foreclosure, they will have had a dozen warnings.
That information is on a statement that is sent to them also each time.
Okay, I just wanted to see. I didn't know, so I was just asking for some clarity. Thank you. So on this one here, where are we at with this section on this one, on this line item now? Are we going to have to send this one off to legal or what?
From what I'm hearing, we're all pretty much agreeing on column 4, except for thinking that maybe we might want to get insert a little bit more verbiage about after, you know, something to restrict us to the 36 months, too, so that we have that done by that time. We might just add some verbiage in there on that.
Well, that's the language, if the association wants to, and again, the kind of the feeling the last few years with the members has been, you know, again, I've been on the board when members were critical that we were starting foreclosures in less than 3 years and they were mad. Now we have members that kind of are feeling like if you let it go over 2 years or in third year, you're not doing your job. So if we're going to do that, we would add a sentence, something about, you know, may do assessments and stuff within 12 months, but must start foreclosure before 36 months so that the board doesn't even have the authority just to let it ride. You know, they're under obligation to start that process.
Okay.
And that gives you a little window to try to negotiate something, which is not a bad thing.
And a way to be humane with somebody who's having really difficult times, a heart
right.
attack or other problems.
Right. So you specify the start, absolute start, and absolute end of the process. I think that's good.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that kind of that wording in column 3, that last bit, pull over to 4, but not say that we have the authority, but that the board must start foreclosure by after 36 months so that we have 2 years to get that worked through and collected before it's lost to a tax sale or something.
Okay, and we can do that. Okay. Any other comment on that before we move on to A below it?
Hey, Jody?
Yes?
Jody, can I interrupt just for a moment and have you pay attention to what time it is?
10:08. All right, let's see how much we have. Well, so we're about a third of the way done.
I didn't want to, you know, I'm not trying to cut you off, but I think we're
continue this.
I know our agenda says or immediately following. We're going to be at 3 o'clock before we follow.
Yeah, this is a long document to go through, so we could split it up between meetings. I don't
think
you want to wait till the next board meeting.
I think we've made good progress thus far.
But this, anybody joining the board meeting is going to call in the same call, right?
Yeah.
So what I'd like to propose is just, you know, to take another 10 minutes and assume that any of the boilerplate stuff, you know, we probably have spent too much time on that. On the hot topics, I would at least just like to know, let's say that we were going to approve this with the far right-hand column on everything, pending having the attorney reword some things or those type things. Is our big issue still back on the separation of lot and membership?
No, I don't think it is. This is Dale.
Okay, so what areas, Dad, what are you uncomfortable with that prevented this from passing before?
This is just kind of a summary of the whole thing. The other 20 pages was cut out and left out because the committee who hired the attorney and told him how to skew the thing was, I think, very unfair, and that's caused the aggravation to begin with. Like was on the one where they wanted to preserve the rules and regulations that they had established on a particular date rather than letting the future boards make those decisions. And so there are other solutions on the, like filmings. I don't know that there's been a lot of talk about separating the membership from the land. I think sometime in the future that's going to be done, but I still don't know how to do it without upsetting the apple cart. I think that there is logic in having the membership available without buying it to land, but that may not happen at this time, but that was one of the big items 10 years ago when we worked on this. In going through the whole thing, if there are other issues other than the separation of membership and land, and again, letting the membership decide, there's some other items in here that we do need to work on, but I do not have them flagged right now.
Can I, Dale, step in here just a second? The attorney we hired, it was a board thing. It's not just Phil Hall. It was even a little prior to me. And these documents, I don't know, I think it was just some shock and awe with all of a sudden we got this attorney. And frankly, feelings of... Lessened and we've kind of indirectly worked through some of these things already over the years. There wasn't a whole lot other, but the voting rights, if you look, scan down to number 21 in the third column, that was another big thing. But I think Dale, is an agreement. And like I was saying, Dale and I both have come together in many ways on some of these feelings, and the boards in between time have pretty much come to certain feelings. So I think this is a much better time. We're much more closer in agreement on most of these things. That's why we've sort of almost sailed through a lot of it, and I think we made good progress today. But let
me ask a couple of those things. I mean, just like I'm curious, and I see some of the logic in, is there anybody who feels strongly that if someone's delinquent that they cannot vote?
Yes, I feel strongly about that.
I feel strongly they should or shouldn't.
Well, either way, I'm sure that Dale's saying that they should be able to and Jody's saying that they shouldn't. But, again, the rationale and the logic is, I may be in collections to the IRS. I can still vote in America, and I may be delinquent on my property tax. I still have a right to vote for my county commissioners. And so I agree that suspending rights means you can't use cabins, and that you can't use some of the facilities, but should you be able to still make a decision on who is on the board of directors and is representing you as a leader? So that's one thing. I think that we've made good progress, and from here to try next month we'll meet face to face. I'm assuming we'll determine that. But if we can set aside and between now and then, now all of us have a much better idea of kind of the whole feel of this and reminded ourselves where we were, and then keep going from there.
I have made a note of everything that you've been doing so far, and from what you said a little bit earlier, a blanket acceptance of the fourth column is not appropriate from the notes I've been taking, but these will be, I'll be publishing these, of course, with the minutes, but to go forward from here at another time.
I don't know, well, I don't, again, to make a copy of somebody's notes, we've all taken those and let people know that maybe we're not able to be here today. Again, if somebody wants to be involved and wasn't able to make this, they're going to call Linda or a member of the board and say, I'll give you my notes. I don't want to confuse people or mislead them or stir up a big fight that we're, you know, nothing's been accepted. I was not saying or recommending at all to just blanket accept column number, the right-hand column. I was just saying that seemed to be the closest to getting approved last time, and so I was just trying to find, you know, in 1 or 2 minutes what was the deficiencies. So, like I said, I think we all need to study it and make notes, and instead of going through and reading it and telling, you know, and thinking through it, if we can do that the next month when we can come together, we should be able to go through the rest of it in twice the time, and people quickly say, I've already read it, and I've already marked out a side. I'm okay with it, or here's my recommended changes.
Ben, what she just stated, Ben, she just was clarifying that you earlier stated column 4 pretty much all the way through, which Linda's correct that, no, we've had some column 2, column 3s, and some column 4s.
Right. And I was saying, I was referring to what we have not gone over, the rest of it. I thought that Dale and Phil, who have worked on this quite a bit, may tell us in the future, the rest of the document, what are the hot points, so that as we study this next week, we can all kind of formulate our own opinion of which way we feel that the association would be best served in today.
This is Las Vegas, okay. Nevada. I have been following along this morning, and I do like the way the movement has gone on all parts of the 1, 2, 3, 4 columns. I am at this meeting on the phone, and I will again be at the meeting next month with Joe Bose.
We appreciate that, Candy.
Okay, well, suggestions. I'm sorry, Phil, were you talking?
If I could, just 1 second. I just wanted to point out one thing on the voting thing, just so you mull this over in your mind. What Ben was saying about voting at, you know, in public elections, and the difference that we saw at the time is this isn't a public, it's not quite the same. It's by election, we elected to join an association by ownership, and in so doing, people should consider all of the protected covenants and bylaws and protected, you know, things, and that's why suspending voting rights was the only way to have, with the other things, to have any kind of enforcement effect upon people not following the rules. And the voting right is not the same in this personally selected to join group. You decide to come in and be a part of a group and to abide by its laws. And it's not like the constitutional.
Right. I was just stating, not my personal view, but what a line of thinking that some believe in. I'd like to do some research on a lot of other HOAs and associations, because I think that the masses have already determined what is, you know, logical and fair. Not that we have to do what everybody else is doing, but I'm curious what the majority of others are doing. So I will look into that before we meet next.
Okay.
Great.
Can I make a couple suggestions?
Sure.
What I'd like to do is I will go ahead and take what – I know, Linda, you wrote notes, and that's good because I'll refer back to you for some information. But what I'll do is take up to this point that we got to today, and I'll retype up as we talked about, and then I'll confer with Linda and make sure that I've got it correct so that we at least have this part kind of written up to see, okay, is this what we agreed on so we can put it out there? And then I also like recommend that we don't wait till next month. You know, in a month from now, we're all going to forget what we talked about. We're all going to forget and reread this over and over again. Can we not do the same phone conversation in 2 weeks and do it on a two-week time basis until we're through with this document to get us a little bit more ahead of the game, and then we'll have time to, once we all get that agreed and everything hashed out and worked through, then it allows the attorney enough time to put it together so we do have it ready by August so we can be ready for the September meeting. I'd rather not...
Would you like to state that by way of motion?
Yes, I would. Well, we don't have a... do we have a quorum, or do we need it just by us?
You have a... I think you have 6 out of 7, I do believe. No, but you have 5 out of 7.
5 of 7, so we definitely can make a motion as a board and then, you know, put it in the minutes of our meeting.
Well, and we also want to ask, you know, Phil and Candy and everybody else that has joined today, that will they be able to or willing to participate in this in, like, 2 weeks? So we, you know, on a 2 week basis, we can get it done. So I don't know if it needs to be a motion through the board, does it?
No,
for what it's worth, I'm willing to participate 2 weeks. This is Phil.
I think it's a good idea, and let's do it. Is Saturday the appropriate thing? I do still struggle with having, you know, 3 Saturdays within a 30-day period, you know, dedicated. Is there another time that we can do it, you know, early afternoon, after work hours, or something, to spend another hour to 2 hour block on this, where, you know, where we're doing a conference and nobody's needing to travel, you know, to not have it on Saturday.
I wouldn't be opposed to doing that on a midweek situation or during the weekday situation, as long as it's not on a Friday.
Candy Bose says she agrees. 2 weeks sounds great. Any day of the week, any time.
Great.
Yeah.
This is Phil. I'm a little more restricted. I would have to have it, like, if it's during the week, later hours, like 7 to 9 at night, or 8 to 10, or, you know, anyway.
Yeah, this is Vance. Yeah, evenings, just about any time. You know, I'm on pretty much on the road all day, driving all around, so just, you know.
What about
we can work this out via email if you'd like, I suppose.
Let's just try to at least target something. Everybody, I propose that we do it on Thursday the 24th.
Wednesday. We're not on...
Good chance, Ben. That rules me out.
Oh, that's right. That's right. How about if we go to the Tuesday... well, Wednesday's rules me out, so...
Tuesday?
Tuesday the 22nd.
That works.
That works for me.
January, I'm fine.
Yep, same here.
9 p.m.
Let's tentatively go for it.
7 o'clock?
What's that? Okay.
I'd say pencil it in unless we have something else that comes up that we need to change, but let's try for this so we can get this worked through as quickly as possible and without losing our memory cells in between.
7 to 9 Utah time?
Yes.
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 I'm in agreement. We got both Bill and Patsy. You're shaking their head yes.
22nd.
On the 22nd.
Is there anybody that cannot make it on the 22nd that would cause a problem there?
Are this is Bob, and it's fine with me.
All right, good. Let's do it. Let's let's move into the
close this
next meeting. Agenda.
Yes, I agree. All right, I'm gonna ask you, Vance. Do we have any new members as far as the roll call goes?
A short break.
Yeah, I was gonna suggest that too. Some of you guys must have bigger bladders than I do.
Some of us have already wandered away and come back.
Yeah, I know. At least Ben admitted to it. Well, hang on a minute. Let me see. I am showing 10 people on the line. I'm one of them. So I don't think it's changed.
Okay. Do we need to get, so you want a 3-minute break? 5-minute break?
3 minutes.
Sounds good. 3 minutes.
3 minutes because Ben's already been.
I gotta go again. I got the smallest bladder of the whole group,
okay.
I promise.
I'll give it to you.
I've had 7 Cokes.
I wouldn't doubt that.
Hey, this is Phil. I'm sorry. I've got a split. I may rejoin you in a while, but I've got some duties to attend to right now.
Phil, we appreciate your assistance and your memory on some of these items.
Yeah. Hey, Phil, this is Ben. One question I had for you. I didn't know, have you gotten any response from us on your letter? That's one thing we're going to talk about. I think that it's only fair and good business that any written request of the board deserves a written response, and I know that you've been very patient, and I would be much more frustrated in the letter that that you've given us. We have discussed that, and I don't think that the board approved or came up with the answer that you were hoping, but have we even responded to you? And if not, I'm just curious, because we have got to set some better goals for us this year to be better on that.
No, I haven't had anything official. I did talk to Dale on a Thursday one time and kind of relayed what your thinking was, and so I would like to revisit with you. I'm trying to collect a little bit of my data behind the whole project, because it did span almost 4 years and different boards and members and things I was told.
Okay, well, and that's where I think the minutes do reflect in our discussion that at the time, the board, consensus or decision was a negative or not affirmative to approving kind of what you had proposed. But, you know, if there is additional data or something, but I just want to ask that just as far as, policy and our answer, I want to make sure that in the future and again, that's just that's not a policy or procedure, but as a board, we've got to be where when people give us a written request that we at least give them some response within a reasonable amount of time is only fair. So anyway, if you do have something beyond that or whatever to turn in, we can deal with it again. I don't want to go too far back in, beating ourselves up for last year, but I do think we've got to be better in the future at responding to members in a written fashion and know, who's going to do that, and so that, members aren't just left hanging for months and months.
Yes, that would be what I would say is probably brought on a lot of the problem, is whether it was the board person over the roads or, other communications were made, but there was a big thing about the lawsuit, and there was all about the water, and I kind of got lost and never got official written things all along the way, and yet would get indications from various board members and from the branch manager, and so unfortunately, this document I sent you is not the first document I ever sent. I mean, there was
letters
and stuff, and so I would have done. Like to reconsider, have you reconsider, and I'll try to summarize a little more of where I'm coming from for why I did what I did. Okay?
Hey, sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.